Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, everybody. It is great to be with you on this New Year's Day, day one of 2021. We are thrilled to see 2020 in the rearview mirror. Certainly, we hope that 21 will be a much happier, a much more prosperous, and most importantly, a much healthier and safer New Year for everyone, and especially our listeners here at The Score. You guys are the best. We thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to bring you sports 24/7. You have made us Chicago's number one rated all sports radio station, and we cannot thank you enough. Hope everybody is enjoying a nice, relaxing New Year's Day with plenty of sports to come later in the day, and obviously a huge sports weekend in Chicago. I am Hub Arkish, my co-host Arthur Arkish. We get to do this every once in a while, and it is a very special treat for me to get to work with one of my sons. And we're trying to break down Bears-Packers for you every way we can. We will have 3 hours of the best Bears talk in town, the best pregame show in town, Sunday starting at noon with our Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show with Olin Krutz and Patrick Manley. I will be there as well. Unfortunately, no postgame this week because we'll be going right to Bulls basketball after the Bears-Packers game, but it will still be the only place in town to be all weekend for the best on the NFL and the Chicago Bears. And, you know, Arthur, we've pretty much broken this down every way we can. There was breaking news this morning. Breaking news on The Score is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Find out how far an extra mile really goes. David Bakhtiari, their all-pro left tackle, many believe the best left tackle in football right now, suffered a knee injury in practice yesterday. And it appears that he tore his ACL. They are still working on that diagnosis, but he is out Sunday, could be out for an extended period of time. And, you know, that obviously has game-changing implications. We've pointed out that Bakhtiari did miss time earlier in the season. He was out weeks 7 through 9 against Houston, Minnesota, and San Francisco. Interestingly enough, the Packers did lose one of those games. They got beat at home by Minnesota. Didn't have a lot to do with Bakhtiari. It was more the Vikings running all over the Packers defense. They've been in situations before where they've had Billy Turner swing over to left tackle and Rick Wagner step in at right tackle. Rick Wagner banged up his knee last Sunday night against the Titans. He is questionable for Sunday, did not practice Wednesday, did have limited participation in practice yesterday. We'll let you know later today what happens at their practice today, although this is pretty much a walkthrough at this point anyway. If Ricky Wagner is unable to go, Billy Turner is not really a tackle. He's a guard who plays up and down the offensive line. Elgton Jenkins is probably the best young offensive lineman on the Packers, and he played some tackle when Bakhtiari went down midseason, but he is primarily a center or a guard. And the belief is if Wagner can't go at right tackle, then there's a good chance that Billy Turner would stay there and Elgton Jenkins would go out to left tackle. No matter how you spin it, it's an edge for the Bears. It's not necessarily a game changer. It's not a difference maker. It doesn't make it easy, but it's certainly an edge that the Bears weren't counting on 24 hours ago.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And this is, you know, it just, I think, magnifies the need for the Bears dudes to go out and be dudes and take advantage of an edge that they have. So excited to see what they can do. Again, the guys that are healthy are really good. Corey Linsley among the best centers in football too. That's another awesome matchup with Bilal Nichols and Akeem Hicks that that will be, you know, is going to loom large in this game, of course. Bilal Nichols has been playing terrific football of late, showing the opportunism that some other guys haven't. And I think that maybe is, I don't want to say it's overblown, but I don't want to slight Nichols either. I think he's turning into a pretty good player too, not just someone who takes advantage of those opportunities. But there will be another big one for him, of course. And we didn't get into it too much, Hub, but I'm curious what you think, and you especially because you get to sit next to the Olens and the Pat Manleys of the world. What's the latest? Sam Mustipher, not quite as good Sunday in Jacksonville, I don't think, as he had been. And we had mentioned or just briefly touched on the Kenny Clark matchup, a guy who hasn't put up the huge numbers but can ruin a day really quickly if you give him a chance.
Yeah, I think what you need to know about Sam Mustipher is that he is an outstanding technician. He is a student of the game. Probably the biggest benefit that he's given the Chicago Bears is the way he has made the line calls, directed the offense, identified the blitzers, and identified the defenses and the coverages, and made all of his fellow offensive linemen aware of what was coming. Some of that was missing earlier in the year. His technique is outstanding. He can play with anybody. I don't know he's ever going to be a Pro Bowler, but what happened Sunday is the Jaguars identified it, and they put their biggest 330-pound monsters on him. He can get overpowered a little bit if his technique isn't perfect. And with Kenny Clark there, that obviously is a concern. But I'm sure, you know, this is not news or a secret to the Bears. They will get him the help he needs to deal with Kenny Clark. And so it's a matchup to watch, but it's one that there's a good chance that the Bears can survive. Arthur, let's get
to the... What do you think...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just really quick, I'm kind of picking your brain too. What do you think the ascent of both Mustipher and Bars means here for 2021, obviously, with some guys coming back and more interior players than obvious tackle candidates?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question because basically I still believe that James Daniels needs to be at center. I mean, you used a second-round pick on him. I think he can be a perennial all-pro. Again, I get to work with guys like Olin Krutz who know a little bit about it. He completely agrees with me on this one. Center is his most natural position where his ceiling is the highest. He was playing very well at guard. And so you now have options of you play Daniels at center, you play Cody Whitehair at left guard. That is clearly his best position. And then maybe you leave Alex Bars at right guard. Maybe you bring back Jermaine Ifedi. But with Mustipher and Bars behind them, you've got plenty of depth. And so the interior of the offensive line looks to be in good shape. Now, there was also the possibility when they signed Alex Bars as a priority free agent, undrafted rookie free agent, that he might project out at left tackle. He played some of it very early at Notre Dame before he moved inside. He's got that type of body size and technique. Olin and Patrick tell me that they think he could be good, but he probably doesn't have the kind of franchise left tackle ceiling that you'd like out there. But it would be another option if you leave Mustipher at center and you've got Daniels and Whitehair at the guards, and now you want to try Bars out at left tackle. You know, you've got that possibility. I don't know that he is enough of a mauler to play right tackle. So, but at the end of the day, there is more depth on this offensive line than we realized. It is certainly frustrating that it took the coaching staff this long to realize the contributions that Bars and Mustipher could make, but that's in the rearview mirror. You know, again, if they win Sunday, nobody's going to be talking about that stuff. Everybody's going to be back. If the Bears lose Sunday and then the naysayers come out and they want changes, that is something that Matt Nagy and his staff will be criticized for, but it really isn't relative to at least the Packers game right now. Let's get back to the phone lines, Arthur. We're going to go to the BetQL Score listener line and welcome Joe in, who's out in St. Charles. Joe, how you doing?
Hi, guys. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
You know, you were talking about the Bears being up against the salary cap, and I think the salary cap is a joke. I think it's a negotiating tool for ownership, and I think the financial guru of the Bears is Ted Phillips, and this might be a chance for him to actually earn his paycheck for once.
Well, Joe, thank you for the call. I couldn't possibly disagree with you more about the salary cap being a joke. The salary cap is what makes the NFL the best game in town. It certainly is to the advantage of the owners. It gives them a certain level of control over their costs, but it also creates the best competitive balance of any major professional sport, and it's what makes the NFL so special. So now, as far as how you work it and how you use it, Ted Phillips is the president and CEO of the team, and initially he was a bean counter. He's an accountant. He was the CFO for a while, but he is not their capologist. That would be Joey Lane, who oversees all of their cap management and their contract negotiation. Arthur, the Bears will go into the offseason projected to be a million or two over the cap, and that's not including the fact that Allen Robinson and Jermaine Ifedi and Tayshaun Gibson and Roy Robertson Harris will all be unsigned. Before you can even talk about signing any of them, if you want to, you got to find a way to get under the cap. So they have cap issues, but I don't see Ted Phillips having any particular impact on that going forward.
No, nor do I. But I think that a better way of putting it is that the cap can almost always be manipulated. I'm guessing that that's what the caller was referring to. If it is, then I would agree with that. The Bears are very likely going to be, it looks like, kicking the can down the line one more time. Or I shouldn't say very likely, but I think the most likely outcome is continuing to kick the can down the line. Now, of course, what makes things more difficult this year is, I think you just alluded to, but in addition to all those other free agents, there is the Mitch Trubisky question that's out there. And it's expensive to pay quarterbacks. It's expensive to pay pass rushers. The Bears will need one of those too. So we'll have time to discuss all the hurdles that need to be cleared in the offseason. And there are more than a few. But the Bears have a not great cap situation. It's not the worst either. Look at the New Orleans Saints or the Philadelphia Eagles. Those are some really bad cap situations right now.
Let's go out to Rockford and welcome Mike into the show. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. Great to have both of you on there. Hob, I've called it a long time, and in the middle of the year when the Bears were going through the six-game losing streak, I was the first one to say everyone needed to go. I called up the call after the game, and I said that they just need to clean house, and I know I had to get a better grip of what was really going on and realize it was a mistake to say that at the time. Hub, what I'm afraid of with this game coming up and actually going into the offseason, obviously, if the Bears somehow squeak into the playoffs, I don't expect them to go far. Okay, I don't think anybody does. I think it's how they play this game and how Trubisky performs to see whether or not, I think this game is the make or break for Mitch. If he has an absolute horrible game, he throws like two or three picks, just real stupid picks. I'm not saying something like a deflection or, something like that, or a tip ball. I'm talking about just a stupid, blatant interception that he's done in the past. I mean, if he does a couple of those and it costs the Bears the game, we know we can't move forward with him as a quarterback. Now, that being said, Hub, the Bears have been stuck in football mediocrity for the last, actually since Brett Favre came in the league. They've had some seasons where they've won the division. They went to the Super Bowl in 06. They had some flashes in the pan. But it's always this football mediocrity. They're never the Cleveland Browns, the Cincinnati Bengals of the league. They're not Jacksonville Jaguars. But they're right in the middle. And that's almost the worst, because you never really get the good picks. You don't get the good number ones. And this obviously, GM has made a track record of giving picks away. And I think he's done a few good decision makings in his latter rounds. But Pace, for the most part, his first and second round, he's not done so well. And just the draft capital that he's given away. So, Hub, I just want to ask you real quick, or both you guys, what you think going into this game. If the Bears somehow lose to the Packers, okay, but let's say it's a really close game and the Bears play a really good game, they still lose, and then somehow they still get in because of, what happens with the Cardinals, okay? Then I think people be a little more. But if it's a blowout, Hub, and they look terrible and they still get in the playoffs, really, where is there any hope at that point?
Well, Mike, first, thank you for the call. And first of all, just, both sides of the story, full disclosure here. I think when you look at Cody Whitehair and James Daniels and even Anthony Miller, and now this year, very promising starts for Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson, I would strongly disagree that Ryan Pace hasn't done well in the second round. He missed on those top 10 picks early, the first three, and that is really where the focus stays with him. As far as Arthur, mediocrity. I understand where Mike is coming from. I would still much rather be the Chicago Bears than the Bengals, the Jets, or the Jaguars. But I don't. That wasn't his point, and I get it. And it's not unusual. I mean, you take a look at the Packers, at the Patriots, at Seattle, at New Orleans, at Pittsburgh. Show me any other team in the league than those five that over the last decade or two hasn't been up and down. That's the NFL. And again, what separates those teams is the quarterback. We know that, and so, and by the way, those quarterbacks, almost none of them came in the top five, top 10, or top 15 of the draft. When you think about it, who are we talking about here? Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees. I mean, that's not necessarily where you go for these guys. And so it's really about getting one pick right. Whether it turns out Mitch was the right pick and he continues to develop and you bring him back, which seems unlikely, or your next one, that tends to change everything.
It does. Yeah, the quarterback misses are magnified in this league. There's no question about it, and the successes are too. The one thing I guess I'd rather be the Jacksonville Jaguars right now than the Bears. There's no doubt about that. With Trevor Lawrence lottery ticket, all the extra draft ammunition and money to spend, the Jaguars are set up now, if they do it right, to become successful pretty quickly. And obviously the Bengals have Joe Burrow, but that was a disappointing start. His rookie season, ending the way it did. So, I think the caller is correct. The Bears have been mired in mediocrity, and they either are going to need to get super lucky to claw their way out of it, or they're going to have to get real bad before they have a chance to get good. So, I guess you'd prefer the former, certainly, but we're going to find out before too much longer which way they're going.
All right, Arthur. I don't know if it's age and youth or just chocolate and vanilla, whatever it may be. It's just opinions, but there is no way on hell, even with the excitement of Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow, that I'd rather be the Jaguars or the Bengals than the Bears.
I don't mean as a charter franchise. I mean
I know what you mean. You would not rather
have the Jaguars set up right now than the Bears?
Absolutely not. The Chicago Bears are a win Sunday away from possibly going into the playoffs and competing. The Jaguars are going to draft Trevor Lawrence, who looks like the next big thing, and the last 10 next big things have all been busts. And so, until the Jaguars and the Bengals and the Jets get to where the Bears are at now, and then hopefully with those quarterbacks, then it becomes a different story. But this is the debate I've been having with Bears fans on the air all year long. No, I don't want to be one of the worst teams in the league just because it gives me a chance to miss again on a top five pick. It's all progression, and you got to get to mediocre before you get to good when you're that bad. And so I think the Bears are better positioned right now for future success in the short range than the Jaguars or the Bengals or any of these other bottom feeders. Well, we can continue that debate, but first we got to take a quick break because now I'm late getting to one of my favorite guests. Bruce Levine's going to be with us in just a couple minutes. We want to talk about the Darvish trade. We're going to do that next right here at 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Thank you all so much for being with us today. Arthur Arkush is here hosting. I am co-hosting. I am Hub Arkush. We are enjoying getting to spend the first half of our New Year's Day together. We hope you all are enjoying the holiday as well. The bowl fervor is underway in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. We've got a 7-7 tie early between Georgia and Cincinnati. We are now going to switch away from football for just a few minutes at least and get to huge baseball news here in town this week. The Chicago Cubs trade Yu Darvish to the San Diego Padres for right-handed pitcher Zach Davies and four prospects. We now have the pleasure of welcoming in our senior baseball expert here at The Score, Bruce Levine. And Bruce, I hope the holidays have been good to you so far and that you are enjoying a New Year's Day off. We appreciate you taking a few minutes off for us.
It's a pleasure joining you guys, and so far it's been cootie free, so everything is good going toward 2021. We're in 2021, but as my old friend Robin Ventura used to warn us, when I remember sitting on the bench with him and they were in the throes of a 7-game losing streak, when everybody would say around him, well, you know, things can't get any worse, he reminded people that that's not necessarily the case. I think they went on to lose two more. So let's hope it is a better year and a happy and healthy one for all people in Chicago and around the world.
Bruce, I am intrigued by Yu Darvish's reaction to the trade as he met with the San Diego Padres media yesterday, saying, and I quote, with what's happening with the coronavirus and the money the Cubs have, I wasn't thinking about being traded, Darvish said. Also, they're a winning team, and I thought we'd be able to compete. I think you kind of summed up what a lot of Chicago Cubs fans were thinking, and the frustration that I'm feeling a little bit right now is knowing where the Cubs are at. Had they traded Yu Darvish for the top two or three prospects in anybody's system, with one or two of them being pitchers, I would have said, fine, this makes sense to me. This is how you restock. That's not what they did. They got a pretty good pitcher in Zach Davies, although he feels more of the journeyman type than the number one or number two guy in the rotation. And I get what they're doing with these four prospects, and they may very well have the next Eloy Jimenez or Gleyber Torres, but they didn't get top prospects, and they didn't get any pitching. That's the part that frustrates me. And then, as Darvish points out, you know, Jed Hoyer acknowledged it. He said part of this is financial. It is very frustrating to Cubs fans to know that the Ricketts are treating this like a mid-market or small-market type franchise.
Well, how about, I'm glad you brought this up, because there has to be a clear view of what a top prospect is in someone's organization. So a number one prospect in the Cub organization is not the same or equal to necessarily to a number one draft or number one prospect in the Padre system. The Padre system has been ranked in the top four for the last 4 years, okay? And for the Cubs, who are ranked 25 and below in prospects, it's not equal to what you're talking about. So you can't go from team to team and say, well, we got the Padres 11th, 13th, 15th, and 16th choice in this deal, and it's not worth it, because these were all highly touted, very important signings for the San Diego Padres, who spent millions of dollars on these kids, three of them at age 16 and 17, and they're all highly touted. So when you compare prospects from team to team, you have to be very careful about saying, well, they're not the same quality. And in this case, it's believed that the Cubs got some very high-quality young players. That said, I understand the frustration of Cub fans. I understand frustration of people looking at it saying, when you trade your number one pitcher and arguably the best, or one of the two or three best pitchers in the last year and a half, you have to get more back to show that it's equal. Well, you know, there's some really famous trades down the line that that brought back players like John Smoltz and Jeff Bagwell, unheard of back in the day. So I'm not apologizing for Hoyer or the Cubs. I'm just pointing out that in this situation, the Cubs are definitely pivoting, and they're definitely saying we're not going to spend the money we have in the past. But from that perspective, picking up Davies and looking at their staff in their division, that's still a team that's equal to a very mediocre Central Division in the National League.
Bruce, so yeah, we shouldn't grade trades right out of the gate, because we all know better than that, and we'll have to wait and see, especially with the age of these prospects that the Cubs got in return. But what about the other big names? It seems like the Cubs are just getting started in dealing Yu Darvish. I don't think they really care necessarily about the reaction, the trade reaction of the fans, and I don't know whether they foresaw it being this negative. But is there a pretty good chance that there's going to be even more disappointment, more shock and surprise here on the horizon with some potentially even bigger names than Yu Darvish? Because it appears like that's a strong possibility.
Well, shock and surprise is one thing. Disappointment is, and I understand, Arthur, why you say that, because the expectations were that the Cubs were supposed to continue to be the Yankees and the Dodgers and be competitive every year, have a farm system that could could support the team, and they would continue to move on as one of the best teams in baseball from here on, from here to eternity, for lack of another term. But in reality, how many teams are able to do that in baseball? How many teams are able to compete for a championship and rebuild at the same time? So this is a harder case for the Cubs because of the fact that their farm system has failed to give them the players they need to continue on. It's just a matter of fact. Early on, you know, you had the Schwarbers and you had the Bryants and you had the Torreses and the Jimenez, and they did a fine job of developing people. As of late, the last 5 or 6 years, that has not been the case. They haven't really come up with anything other than Ian Happ and David Bodie. Other people are on the horizon, but their farm system has just not done the job, and you cannot continue to compete and win without a good farm system, and they are replenishing that, and it's going to come at a cost of fans being angry, fans being upset, less people maybe going out to the games, but nonetheless, this is the way they feel they have to go right now to be competitive again.
Bruce, they're going to have to make a decision. I shouldn't say going to have to, but it seems likely that there will be a decision made on Chris Bryant between now and July 31st. It's hard to imagine them not doing something, either trying to make a commitment to bringing him back or packaging him for a bunch of prospects mm-hmm. as well. Do you think that this trade has any impact or potential impact on that?
Well, they've tried to trade Chris Bryant. They've actually had conversations over the last 3 years, serious conversations with Philadelphia and Atlanta last year that fell through for some of their young third basemen on those teams. And, this is not something new. I don't think Chris Bryant's coming back to the Cubs. I don't know if you and Arthur Hub were asked to take over the negotiations and offer Chris Bryant a long-term contract at this point, what figure would you come in at? How would you know, considering, you know, the quality of the early part of his career, the injuries that have been a big part of the last few years? How would you know on a 4 or 5 year deal what would be the right price for Chris Bryant?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, the Phillies would love to have some of the Bryce Harper money back. I mean, right. you look at some of the stupid deals that have been done, and then you've got Scott Boras involved. Although my sense, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but sometimes you hear Scott Boras and everybody panics, and he's going to ruin the negotiation. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. Chris Bryant strikes me as the kind of young man who's going to be the ultimate decider. He's going to dictate how this mm-hmm. thing goes more than Boras. And it feels like if the Cubs made a commitment to him, from everything I've heard from him over the years, like he, not that he would take a hometown discount, but that he would probably rather stay than go if all things were equal.
Sure. And you know, he's going to make close to $20 million this year, somewhere between 18 and 19. And he's earned it. From the numbers and the volume of work he put in as Rookie of the Year, MVP. And then the last few years, I think 2019 was a good year for him, but this year was injury plagued, kind of non-existent, you know, other than the last week of the season. He started to put up some numbers, but you kind of have to throw 2020 away for Chris Bryant and look at the totality of the rest of his career. It's been pretty darn good, but the problem is, from a run production point of view, the last 3 years, he hasn't lived up to any expectations. Some people will say that's a product of him batting so high in the lineup, batting two most of the time. But nonetheless, it's just hard to project what type of player he is. I think at 28, the best is still ahead for Chris Bryant. I really do. Unfortunately, the money that he accepts in free agency probably won't come from the Cubs. It'll probably come from some other team after 2021.
The other big names, of course, Bruce, impending free agents, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, Wilson Contreras. There have been reports out there this week that there have been talks regarding Contreras. Anything you can tell us on that? And then is there anyone sure. that's untradeable? I mean, could Javi Baez be dealt this offseason as well?
Yeah, there are no untradeable players on the Cubs. That is okay. Just a product of Epstein and Hoyer stating from the very beginning they would listen to proposals for any of their players at any time, that that's their job. That doesn't mean they want to trade them or would trade them, but they would certainly listen. In the case of Contreras, Hoyer said the other day that although all players will be listened to and talked about, they are not shopping Wilson Contreras, and that the rumors that it's close to being traded were just not true. That doesn't mean that he won't be traded, especially with 2 years left on a contract. But again, you know, when you look at the Cub players and the fact that other than Contreras, as far as the, you know, the bigger players on the team, they're all going to be free agents after 2021. Do you expect the Cubs to make a run at Javier Baez? I would think yes. You know, I would think that would be a smart thing for the Cubs, and even smarter for Baez, who will be in a free agent market after 2021 with other shortstops like Lindor of the Indians, you know, Seager of the Dodgers. There are quite a few, a Story of Colorado. Some of the very best shortstops in baseball will be free agents in 2021 after the season. So is that going to diminish Javier Baez's market as a free agent? I would think that if he's smart and the Cubs are smart, they get something done here because at age 27, one of the best defensive shortstops in the league coming off of a poor 60-game season, you know, I still think his best years are way ahead of him.
Bruce, we're going to have to run. We've got one more guest that we want to get to. But before we go, I know you're going to be inside the clubhouse tomorrow. Anything special planned for your program?
Between 9 and 10:45, thanks, Hub, for the plug. Matt Spiegel and I will be talking Chicago baseball with Steve Stone, the color commentator for White Sox baseball, and Jim DeShays, the color commentator for the Chicago Cubs. Have a happy new year, guys. Thanks for having me on, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Be well. This hour on The Score is brought to you by the Exogen Twice Daily Thermometer. We've got Bill Huber, who covers the Packers for SI.com, going to join us for a quick visit in just a moment. Stay right where you're at. You've got The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Aaron, how much more challenging do you think it'll be against Chicago's defense this time around with them having Hicks back in there? And for you, where does Roquan Smith rank in terms of the dynamic inside linebackers that you guys have faced?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the best, if not the best group of linebackers. I've always been a fan of Danny. I think he's a great tackler, you know, a downhill guy who brings it every single time. And Roquan is just so talented sideline to sideline. You know, he's a dynamic player, been ascending since he got there. You know, I remember he was holding out and we were kind of, you know, hoping they wasn't going to play a couple years ago just because he knew the talent level that he had. He's a special, special player.
The king himself speaks, Aaron Rodgers, talking about the challenge of the Chicago Bears linebacking group and defense in general. And Arthur, I think A-Rod made a very important point there that a lot of folks have been missing. There was a lot of head scratching and even complaining and whining early in the season that Danny Trevathan, you know, may have been a mistake. He was coming back from a serious injury, missing the second half of last season with no offseason. Over the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, he has been every bit of Danny Trevathan again, playing some of his best football. And whatever problems the Bears defense has had, and they've had some the last 4 weeks, it has not been because of Trevathan and Roquan Smith.
Yep, it's true. I was very worried early in the season. He didn't look good the first couple weeks, and obviously he got the big deal. He's already on the wrong side of 30, so it doesn't mean that the deal will look, you know, will still look all right even come this time next year. But you're right, he has rallied and put together a really nice season and is not among the issues that they're currently dealing with. So hopefully he can hold up, especially with that style of play. That's kind of what you worry about a little bit, too.
I had mentioned that we hope to be joined by Bill Huber of PackerCentral.com at SI.com. We're having a little trouble connecting with Bill, so I don't know if we're going to be able to get him in before we have to sign off or not. Arthur, we've only got about 10, 12 minutes left here. It has been a really fun morning, a great start to the new year. kicking around everything that is everything in Chicago sports right now. But as big a news as the Cubs made with the Darvish trade, and of course the really disappointing news about the illness of Jonathan Toews, as well as the injuries to Kirby Dach and Alex Nylander with the Blackhawks, the story is certainly Sunday. It's win and you're in. And we talked earlier in the show, we've gotten away from it, about the outsized magnitude of this game on the future of the Bears organization. I mean, at the end of the day, they are who they are going into the game. You know where this roster has talent. You know where it is lacking. We know where it needs to be upgraded. But this idea, because I'm seeing it here now on the text line, we continue to hear from some of our listeners out there. The Text Zone brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Get it over with. They're backing in. They don't deserve it. Guys, if they beat the Packers Sunday, they will have beaten what is the best team in the NFC right now, which suggests that they could play with anybody in the playoffs. They will have finished on a four-game win streak. They will have earned their way in. This isn't about backing in. Now, if they lose and get in, then I agree. I don't take any satisfaction in it. I don't know that you accomplish anything by getting into the playoffs. It doesn't hurt your draft status all that much because, you know, you're going to land where you would have at 8-8 anyway. But for the most part, you do go now with the bottom 14. Actually, it used to be bottom 12, but now it's bottom 14. So it probably wouldn't impact their draft status at all. But, you know, Arthur, I think the bigger question Sunday isn't whether the Bears make the playoffs or not. Obviously it's a big question, but it's, is this a team that is worth continuing to try and build into a contender, or is it that bad, you know, that you start to break it down? And so to me, it comes more about being competitive on Sunday than it necessarily does about winning or losing. If they embarrass themselves like they did at Lambeau 5 weeks ago, then it is going to get ugly, and then you can make a real case for you know, tearing down more than necessarily some people think they should.
Yeah, I think you took the words right out of my mouth because I think that barring a real crapping of the bed, yeah, then these probably we already know the fate of the big three, the guys we've been talking about for 2021. Or I guess I should at least say Nagy and Pace, because no one knows the fate of an impending free agent and Mitch Trubisky. But yeah, you got to be very careful not to put too much stock into it. And at the same time, it's the Packers, and there's the recent history of all the lack of success. So if any of those narratives are validated, if Mitch comes out and lays an egg, I guess what I'm trying to say is maybe he has the most to lose come Sunday. I don't know if you would agree with that. If he comes out and plays really poorly, maybe you'll have a harder time selling, bringing him back, just because this was the big game. It was all in front of him. But I think more so, you know, Nagy's already made his fundamental shift on offense. Ryan Pace isn't going to be out there tackling or catching pass Sunday. So, I don't know. Do you think Mitch has the most to gain or lose Sunday?
Yeah, I would say that with a group of folks who have a ton on the line, Mitch Trubisky probably does have the most. If he plays up to the way he has performed over the last 4 weeks, he is going to have a market. If he does come out and revert to the old Mitch, so to speak, there probably won't be much of a market for him. Arthur, fortunately, we have been able to connect now with Bill Huber. Bill, of course, at PackerCentral.com, SI.com. And Bill, unfortunately, we're running short on time, but I really appreciate you taking a few minutes for us. No worries. And I wanted to keep trying because even though we visited with Wayne Larrabee a couple hours ago, this David Bakhtiari story is developing news, and it is a big deal. It is not necessarily the difference in winning or losing for the Packers or the Bears, but it is a huge story, and I'm wondering if you've been able to gather any more information this morning on exactly what happened and what they believe. He's not going to go Sunday. I think we know that, but how serious do they think this ACL is?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, Ian Rapoport reported yesterday evening that it was probably season-ending, and that was the confirmation I received. So I know he's one tough SOB. I mean, he's probably not going to play Sunday, obviously. But, yeah, they navigated okay with him. He missed three games earlier in the year, and they were okay without him. But, I mean, they paid him $95 million for a reason. I mean, he is one of the best in the business. So if I had to put a dollar down, I would say they'll move Elgton Jenkins from left guard out to left tackle, and maybe stick rookie John Runyon in at left guard or something like that. But I would think maybe Elgton Jenkins is going to be the guy. They've done a great job protecting them all year. They've done a great job with, you know, the play action and the bootlegs and the variety of drops to kind of make life easier on the linemen to begin with. So they'll probably be okay, but I mean, there's no overstating what a gigantic loss this is either. I mean, left tackle is, I mean, you guys know, I mean, how many first-round left tackles are there? Like 20, 22? I mean, it is the overwhelming percentage of left tackles are first-round picks for a reason.
Right, and yes, it was the Packers, of course, who captured the, or, you know, really hit the jackpot with, what, a fourth rounder in Bakhtiari. The Bears have a seventh rounder.
Right,
Charles
yep.
Leno not quite in the same league as David Bakhtiari. But, Bill, what do you think coming off that Titans performance, the job they did against Derrick Henry, are you sold on this run defense now being where it needs to be? I mean, I feel like we ask the same question every year with the Packers run defense. Where's it at ahead of David Montgomery coming to town? He's obviously running as well as pretty much anyone in the league right now.
Yeah, they've been doing pretty well. It's funny. Football's changed, and it's changed so quickly. I think when people think of top defenses, they think of like the 2010 Packers, which allowed like 14 a game. I mean, that's not today's NFL. It's interesting. I did a story a week or so ago where they're on pace to give like the sixth most points in franchise history, which is terrible, right? Well, they're middle of the pack in the league this year. I mean, that's just the way the league has gone. The defense is pretty decent. It's not great, but it's pretty decent. It's decent up when the offense is great. The run defense was really good against Henry. It's been actually been pretty good, other than the Montgomery run right off the bat in week 12. They're on a pretty good run of success against running backs. Now, there's been some quarterback scrambles, which made their stats look kind of bad. They're doing pretty well, and they bring in Damon Harrison here yesterday, and that's only going to help things. That reminds me of 2010 when they signed Howard Green after he got dumped by the Jets. Howard Green, who's been released to like 12 teams over his career, comes in and was a real, real boost for that run defense. I'm thinking that's the hope here for Harrison.
Bill, I apologize because we were late getting to you, and we're going to have to run only because our show is coming to an end, but we do appreciate your taking time today as we let you go. The Packers have actually played better football on the road than they did at home this year. We know that the home field advantage around the league without fans has become far less important than it is in most years. And yet in talking to Wayne, he indicated that Aaron Rodgers is preaching this is hugely important to have the number one seed and guarantee you can stay home all through January as long as you keep winning. I assume that's the same thing you're hearing from your sources and the players that you're talking to.
Yeah, look, I don't know that Green Bay is the best team in the NFC. Maybe it's New Orleans. If you're the Packers, do you want Drew Brees at the Superdome, or do you want 41-year-old Drew Brees on a miserable day in January at Lambeau Field? I know what I'm taking. That's why home field is big.
All righty, Bill, thank you so much for taking time out. We hope the holidays have been good to you, and you have a great 2021. That is Bill Huber. You can follow him on Twitter, at Bill Huber SI. You can read his Packers coverage at PackerCentral.com, also at SI.com. Arthur, we are just about out of time today. I will be making a prediction for the Bears game Sunday in our Bet Rivers pregame show. We save our picks for then, but this may be your last chance. So I know that Bears Nation is waiting out there. What do you think actually happens Sunday once we're all done beating this thing up and breaking it down?
Yeah, I expect a competitive game. I think it's probably going to be a lower scoring game, which is strange because this Bears offense is suddenly a juggernaut and the Packers have the best offense in football. But I see kind of an uglier, lower scoring game that the Packers are going to win. I also see Sean McVay outclassing Cliff Kingsbury and the Bears backing into the playoffs. So Mitch even he's played extremely well, Hub. But even in the past 2 weeks when he's played so well, he's had a couple throws that you can't make in the red zone. And I just wonder if he's going to have to be perfect in this one and whether he'll be able to.
Yeah, I want to caution everybody about that Rams-Cardinals game. I keep hearing that, you know, and maybe John Wolford will be okay at quarterback, but can they get Cooper Kupp off the COVID list? Michael Brockers, their number two defensive tackle, now goes on the COVID list. Rams going to be really challenged as well. The Bears better win Sunday if they want to be in the playoffs, and then whatever happens after that, we shall see. Arthur, we got to give out our Rookie of the Year award. I don't know that Brandon Fryer is a rookie, but I know he is one of the newer members of our Score production team, and Brandon, just an outstanding job today. Thank you so much for all your work engineering, producing, the great roster of guests that you got together for us. And we do want to give our thanks to Mark Potash, the Bears beat reporter from the Chicago Sun-Times. Wayne Larrabee, the longtime voice of both the Bears and the Packers, joined us. Our very own Jay Zawoski checked in to talk some hockey and the ramifications of the Taze illness, as well as the Kirby Doc and Nylander injuries. We had Bruce Levine here to talk about the trade with Yu Darvish for the Chicago Cubs. And, of course, Bill Huber just signed off. Thank you to all of our guests. Most of all, though, we want to thank all of you for listening, for calling, for texting. As I've said repeatedly, but I can't say it enough, we hope the holidays have been good to you. We are all thrilled to see 2020 in the rearview mirror. This is day one of 2021. We hope that it is a happy, a prosperous, and most of all, a very healthy and safe New Year's for all of you. You want the best sports talk in town, you better stay right where you are. Zach Zaidman, my buddy Double Z, is coming up next. He's going to take you through the afternoon. You've got Chicago's number one rated all sports radio station, 670 The Score. Have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you again on Sunday on the Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show. I'm Hub Arkish for Arthur Arkish. Take care. Happy New Year.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.